Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and I am here with an entrepreneur and an inventor. At least that's the way I think of you. And this is Paul Van Eyl. And try to spell his last name because it's a little tough. But Paul has been here and he's requested a beer that we have not had yet on the podcast, and that is New Glarus's Moon Man Specific. And you have to, if I know right, you have to get it in Wisconsin because that's really the only place they sell it.
Yeah, yeah.
And luckily for us, we live on the border, so I just popped over to the wine house and got New Glarus Moon Man. So we'll crack one of these.
All right.
There you go.
Thank you.
There you go. And I just actually had this on Saturday, which is kind of, I was at a car show. And I was like, oh, Moon Man, I better try this because I can't remember if I've ever had this before. So I said, well, I know I got a guy coming on that's requesting this. So I might as well try it out and see what I'm getting myself into. So
cheers.
No, that's a good one.
Moon Man.
Yeah. It's a no coast pale ale, which
yeah,
not really sure about what that means. Oh, here. It even has a little story on the back. Moon Man is a seriously cool cat, always comfortable in his own skin. He never tries too hard. So cool, we named our No Coast Pale Ale after him. You hold a session beer. Ah, it's a session. With a bright, bold blend of five hops that flirt oblingly with smooth, malty backside. So this is actually a very good beer, and the colder they are, the better they taste.
As long as they're wet.
As long as they're wet, it's good. So this is really good.
It's good stuff. Eh?
I just tried this weekend, I think, for the first time. So I noticed you wore some of your favorite sports gear, as have I. You can just put it right here if you need to.
All right.
There you go. Yeah, I noticed you wore your Winnipeg Jets jersey, which you're the hockey guy.
Grew up in Manitoba, man. And growing up there, well, I moved to I was born in Ontario, outside of Toronto. Moved to Manitoba when I was, I think, 5 years old.
Sure.
And I was there till about grade 9 until I moved to the States. And, still have people up there I keep in contact with. And actually, my one of my best friends growing up, his son plays Division I hockey. And so we're going to be going to the Alaska game at the Gophers in November. So they're playing the Gophers.
Oh, sure.
So yeah, my best friend's son's going to be playing in there. So
What school does he play for, the Gophers?
No, he plays for Alaska Fairbanks. And they're going to be playing a weekend with the Gophers.
Wow, cool.
So, yeah, yeah.
So then you'll have a reason to go to a hockey game. Not that you needed one at all.
No,
but
no, I go to, I can't count how many hockey games I've been to in my life. Probably 75 like NHL games, maybe 100. I mean, it's been a lot.
Yeah,
I lost track after a while.
So the Winnipeg Jets, that's your team?
That's my team.
Okay.
I tell you, you want to talk about Vikings being, having suffered for a long time. Jets fans have suffered a long time.
Well, do they at least have a championship?
They have what's called an Avco Cup, which is the WHA. The WHA lasted in the 70s, and they were kind of a competitor league to the NHL. They didn't make it, so four teams in the WHA in the late 70s merged with the NHL. Okay. Edmonton Oilers, Hartford Whalers, Quebec Nordiques, and Winnipeg Jets.
Okay.
Interesting enough, Wayne Gretzky actually got his start in the WHA. He wasn't drafted into the NHL. He actually, because the WHA was still around at that time.
Sure.
So, and then when the Indianapolis Racers folded, Gretzky was basically, acquired by the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, gotcha. So, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So he actually played a few years before that, not in the NHL?
He played, some junior up in Canada, and he was just destroying, any team that they were playing against.
Sure.
But, he started in the Indianapolis Racers. Oh. So of the WHA, and of course, that league didn't last. So,
sure.
So, ended up going to Edmonton.
Did you hear about, I heard at auction, and maybe you were there, it's probably a trivia. Someone bought a whole bunch of boxes hoping to get some Wayne Gretzky rookie cards. I think they were the Opeachies or something.
Yep.
And they spent a fortune and bought for, I think it was a couple $1 million, just in hopes that there was a few of the Gretzky rookie cards. I think they're from like 1978 or something.
79.
79.
78, 79. What actually I believe happened was they were discovered in an attic in Saskatchewan. You know, I don't know if it was someone who owned a card shop at one point and then passed away, or I don't know the exact details, but someone discovered them in the the attic, and it was boxes of unopened. And those are like the most valuable hockey card. Like Gretzky rookie is like, you know, that's up there. If you want to talk Honus Wagner and, mm-hmm. and you know, baseball and whatnot, that's yep. way up there. And so he found unopened boxes of that year where Gretzky's rookie was in, you know? And so they were offered millions, I think, right away for the whole, you know, but I don't know if they opened them or how exactly it turned out, but it was a huge find. Yeah, huge find.
And unopened.
So, and unopened, all in the boxes, in the wrappers and everything.
That's and nuts.
I remember growing up, you know, we would, it's one of the few things that was untaxed in Canada was hockey cards for some reason.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of the few things that a pack of hockey cards was a quarter a pack. So you could buy, with a dollar, you could buy four packs of hockey cards.
It must be like a religion up there. So they're just like, you know what, don't tax that.
It was hockey up there. And Minnesota's great hockey, too. And there's definitely pockets of the states that are, you know, definitely have good hockey down here, too. Up there, it's, you kind of, you know, here you got the NFL that's just so, so prevalent. I'm a huge Vikings fan, by the way.
Yeah.
And
I kind of remember you saying that, so I had to wear my gear, too.
I've been a Vikings season ticket holder for like 10 years.
Oh, okay.
You know, so, you know, love the Vikings. But, hockey up there, you know, all the best athletes pretty much went to hockey. And if you couldn't make the hockey team, you'd go out for, sorry, but other sports. Other competing sports.
If you couldn't hack it in that.
If you couldn't make, well, my hometown, Winkler, we've had five NHLers from my town.
Oh, really?
Five NHL players from Winkler. Winkler's 13,000 people.
Oh, that's small.
You know, that's like, it's like the size of Sparta-Toma together, maybe.
Yep.
You know, half the size of Winona at best.
Yeah, Winona's, I think, like 27. Then when you add the college kids in there, it goes and up another eight.
And whatnot. But the amount of NHL players, Eric Fair played for the Minnesota Wild, actually. He was from Winkler.
Okay.
Ray Neufeld, one of the first African-American players, actually was from Winkler.
Oh.
Dustin Penner won a Stanley Cup in Anaheim. He was from Winkler. Yeah, some really good. And now, like I said, my good friend's son, he's playing D1 too.
Do you think he has a shot?
He shoots, I think it's 93 miles an hour. So
is that good? You're talking to the guy that's like hockey 101 here.
Yeah.
I know where the puck goes. Mm-hmm. I know that they wear skates. I know what who the Minnesota Wild are.
Yep.
But I don't know much more than that. So anything you say, I'm learning right now. So is 93 a good shot?
It's a very good shot. Okay. I would say the majority of NHLers are between 90 and 95. Okay. The hardest shot ever, I want to say, was like 108 miles an hour.
Okay.
Like Zdeno Chara. I mean, that you get hit with that shot, you're probably not going to live it. You're probably not going to live through it. You know? But, there's a handful, you know, every year there's probably in the NHL maybe 10 to 20 people that can break 100.
Okay.
But the majority of the players are probably in the 90s.
All right.
You know, so, I mean, he's got, you know, my buddy actually just sent me, they were doing a skills competition in Alaska, and he just sent me the video of that shot of him shooting. So, yeah.
Okay. So. Now, you said your hometown was what?
So where I grew up was Winkler, Manitoba.
And where is that in relation to all of Canada? Is it by Winnipeg?
It's south of Winnipeg.
Okay.
If you can imagine Fargo, but colder and flatter,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's Winkler. You know, you go straight north to Grand Forks, then go to the border, just past the border, then you go, left about 15 miles is right there.
Sure. Okay. You know, so it's just north of Minnesota, North Dakota.
Yeah, north of North Dakota, Grand Forks, you know.
So if, for those who are listening, now you kind of know where he's, mm-hmm. where he's from. Mm-hmm. And you said you came here at the age of 9. The other thing you just said is that there's little pockets within America that are big into hockey. Where would you rank Minnesota in that? Are they like the top one, or is there another part of the U.S. that's just like big into that?
Minnesota has been, I would say, the dominant state, you know, mm-hmm. for many, many, many years. you know, in the U.S. Now, the great thing, ever since Wayne Gretzky came to the, you know, to the States back in, I want to say it was 88, he came to L.A. Kings.
Yep.
Hockey has grown. You know, back then the only Southern team was the L.A. Kings. You know, pretty much below St. Louis, there was pretty much nothing.
Sure.
And so now you've got the Dallas Stars, you got the Hurricanes, you got Tampa Bay, Florida, Nash. I mean, you got a lot of Southern teams, and several of them have actually won cups.
Yep.
So that's grown the sport. One of the best players in the NHL is named Austin Matthews, and he actually, there's a guy in Winona that looks just like him, by the way. He comes to trivia once in a while.
Really?
Yes. Oh, I mean, spitting image of him, and he knows it too. I've talked to him about it. But this guy named Austin Matthews, he's from Phoenix, like originally from the Phoenix metro area, and one of the top probably five players in the whole NHL.
Wow.
You know, so not from your traditional, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, your three M's, Minnesota, Michigan, Massachusetts.
Okay.
You know, those are kind of your three main, but then you got New York State, now you got Ohio, you got California, you got Florida, you got, you know, you got players coming from around the country now. The U.S. now puts out in the neighborhood of like 28% of the NHL, which is back. If you go back into the 80s, it was about 5 to 10%. So it's grown, and the competition internationally has gotten so much better. You know, if you go into Sweden, if you go into the Czech Republic, of course, Russia's always very good.
Yep.
These other countries are also putting out very good players. The talent level is insane today. Like Wayne Gretzky would never do today what he did back then. You know, never would put up the type of points that he put up back then.
Okay.
You know?
So the competition is just a little bit more stiff now.
Oh, it's...
Because it's going worldwide rather than just, like you said, St. Louis and up is kind of where your players coming from.
The expansion of hockey in the U.S. is... It's hard to say this as a former Canadian, you know, because I always wanted to, you know, that was our claim. The one thing we could, you know, kind of play with you guys on, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to put a Canadian football team up against the U.S. and be like, okay, let's play. You know, that's not going to.
Yeah.
I don't see the Toronto Argonauts playing against the New York Giants any day soon. You know?
No. Yeah, the Canadian Football League. I think The Rock played in the Canadian Football League for maybe a year, I think it was.
It's actually a much, much better league than people think.
Okay.
Like, if you look at Ricky Williams, you know, you remember him from the Dolphins. Jeff Garcia played in Calgary for several years. Warren Moon, I remember watching Warren Moon play in Edmonton several years before he came to Houston. You know, played for the Oilers, and then obviously ended up in Minnesota.
Yep.
Warren Moon, Joe Theismann. There's been a lot of NFL players that have gotten their start up there. It's obviously they're not going to compete with the NFL, but for the players, like take Johnny Manziel, who went up to Montreal. Thought he was just going to destroy it, right?
Yeah.
Thought he was just going to kill it. Threw five interceptions the first game.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So it's a stiffer competition than people might think.
It's way stiffer than people think. Obviously, it's still not on the level with the NFL.
Yep.
But it's I've always wondered why NFL teams, you know, and Canadians probably wouldn't like me saying this, but why they wouldn't purchase the CFL teams and use them as their farm clubs.
Yeah. Well, it seems like that's where someone might go. If they got cut, they might go there, develop, and then come back, because that happens all the time. Even the XFL has actually brought some people. They've gotten some people into the NFL from there. So
but
it's almost like little minor leagues.
If you look at the – it's interesting. You know, again, it's not on the same level or even close. But if you look at the history of the CFL, it's older than the Green Bay Packers.
Oh.
You know, the Grey Cup has been given out. I want to say it's 109 times, 108 times. It's actually a few years older than the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, wow.
And so the league itself is very, very old. It's the only other football league that's ever lasted. You know, if you look at the old USFL, you look at the old XFL, you look at the World League, remember back in the 90s, you know, they had a World League for a little bit.
Sure.
There's been other football leagues that have tried, but none of them have ever really lasted, you know. And this is the only one that's really stood the test of time, you know, for a long, long time, you know.
Yep.
And so, yeah.
So then you, I assume, had played hockey growing up?
It's an interesting story because we had these villages around Winkler. And, you know, these villages were, you know, we had a school, and like a lot of them would have a hockey rink, you know, but didn't have a whole lot, you know, else. Probably a church in each one or whatever. Our villages would play each other, but truthfully, I couldn't afford to play up there. Like growing up in Canada, I could not afford to play, you know, and at the time it was, you know, in the hundreds of dollars. And this is back in the early 80s, you know, and I have three brothers, and putting four kids through hockey at hundreds of dollars a piece when my dad supported our whole family on $12 an hour,
yeah,
just wasn't gonna go work. Interesting enough though, and I still get my trophies. I was a goalie and I had some success. We played the other villages and we would beat them pretty bad. It was, you know, usually not very easy. When I went to the States when I was a freshman in high school, you know, that's when I moved to Watford City, North Dakota.
Okay.
Way on the west end. They found out I was from Canada. It's a totally true story. They found out I was from Canada. This is where that positive stereotypes can really help you.
I know where this is going.
And so it was before the game. You know, it was Aaron Gravis, I think, and Dustin Qualley, I think, came to my house before the game and said, "Hey, we hear you're from Canada." Watford City was a small town at the time. And it was like, you know, we have a game tonight. I think it was in Williston or Sydney, Montana or something like that. They're like, "Can you come play with us?" And I was like, "I suppose. I mean, I've never played with you guys. I've never practiced with you guys or nothing. But if you guys need a player," and they put me in net, you know, because that's what I played at our village team. And I stayed in net for the next 3 years. You know, after that, I was a starting goalie for the team, and had a lot of individual success too. So it was, you know, that was a fond memory. My high school hockey days were some of the fun, even though we were brutal. Like, we were absolutely a terrible team. It was still some of the best memories of my life, you know.
Yeah.
And I still got them on Facebook, and, you know, so, yeah.
So that's a positive stereotype coming from Canada. Hey, you want to play some hockey?
Yeah.
You obviously know how to play.
Oh, yeah. And I was, you know, pretty, you know, decent, I guess.
Sure.
You know, I was all right. But I could have been brutal, and just because I had a Maple Leaf, they were like, "Okay, he must be okay, right?"
So did obviously you were around for the miracle that happened in the Olympics. Was that as cool to you as it probably is to all the USA people? Or
are you talking
people?
About 1980, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, and I didn't even hear about it up there. Like, I didn't even, you know, and we followed the NHL like crazy. But all of our, you know, I'll backtrack for a second. Russia used to put a lot of, like, their best players into the Olympics.
Sure.
Remember, the NHL would not allow their players to play in the Olympics. That's why Russians did so well for several years.
Yeah.
Then once the NHL started allowing players in the Olympics, Russia, I don't think, has won a gold medal since. You know, and so, you know, Canada's won, like, 3 or 4 gold medals since then. I mean, it's been... You know, yep. So we always focused on the NHL. I followed the Winnipeg Jets like you know, very, you know, strong. And at the time of you know, in 1980, I was only like 4 years old, 4 or 5 years old. So I was really young.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even think I knew about it because I was just so young. But it was a huge feat. It was great for U.S. hockey and not taking, you know, degrading it by any means, but up there we didn't really hear much about it.
Sure.
You know, but obviously it was you know, to this day I think a lot of those players are still, you know, highly recognized. And so
I just kind of wondering how that all affected, because it was cool for the United mm-hmm. States, and I wasn't even born, so I don't know.
Yep.
And I do remember though, the U.S. didn't, they strictly did amateurs even in basketball. That's why U.S. usually never won or even came in close, and then all of a sudden they brought the dream team, and that was the end of that.
Well, the 1980 team, it was college players, and it was, you know, Yuri Zioni. Interesting enough, a few of them went on to mediocre or decent NHL. Like, Neil Broughton had a good NHL career, you know, some of the players on that team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Jim Craig, the starting goalie, I think he was only in the NHL for a couple of years.
Okay.
You know, a lot of the players didn't have... Like, they weren't superstars in the NHL after that. So it was, that made it even more of a feat, because, you know, the Russians would have beat probably an NHL all-star team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how good they were. And by sending these college students and whatnot to play them and beat them, you know, Herb Brooks probably should be noted as the best American coach ever to coach any sport.
Yeah.
You know, he really should be in that conversation, you know, so.
So now you love hockey, obviously, and you invented something.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about that because my dad told me about this back when you used to rent at the Kensington.
Yep.
And I didn't know who you were at the time.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, we've gotten to know each other over the last couple of years from trivia, but you invented a Zamboni. Is that correct?
So technically, I don't want the Zamboni's lawyers calling me again.
Okay. All right. We don't want them. Don't call.
Technically, it's an ice resurfacing machine.
Ah, ice resurfacing machine.
It's like Xerox. It's like,
So Zamboni is just a company name. Like we said, Kleenex for a tissue.
1949, okay. Frank Zamboni invented the Zamboni.
Okay.
Really great invention, obviously. It's still going to this day. The original Zamboni was very crude. You know, it was nothing like what we have today. But it was the same, more or less, concept. So what happened was, and by the way, Frank Zamboni was from California.
Interesting.
So you would think someone who invented the Zamboni would have been from a northern state.
Yeah.
You know, he is an American from California. So just an interesting tidbit. But it was 2011. I was sitting at Bud King here waiting to go on the ice, and I was just, must have been daydreaming a little bit, looked up at the pipes in the ceiling, And the Zamboni was coming on. I'm just like, man, this is taking forever. Because it takes like a good 10 minutes, you know, for a Zamboni to go around. Ice resurfacer, sorry. there's a company out of Canada called Olympia that is their biggest competitor.
Okay.
And people call Olympia trying to order a Zamboni.
Sure.
And I've talked to the owners of Olympia, and they told me that exact, you know, so. But nonetheless, I was just like, I was looking at the pipes. My original thought was, looking back, so ridiculous. I was like, there's got to be a faster way to do this. Hockey, ice time is really expensive. And you can go to a lot of rinks. You could spend $300, $400, $500 an hour to rent ice.
Whoa, that is expensive.
Now, here in Minnesota, we have a lot of arenas. So ice time here isn't really expensive. And I know there may be some people might disagree with me on that, but if they look at ice time in Boston and other places, it's much cheaper here than it is in a lot of places.
Okay.
And that's a nice thing that we have so many arenas. But nonetheless, if you were to go down the street and tell every business that they had to be shut down for 10 minutes out of every hour, you know, 15% pretty much of your time, that wouldn't go over too well.
No.
You know, what business would say, okay, yeah, I'm going to be, you know, shut my doors 15% of every hour? And so that was my thought. I was just like, you know, okay, you take, even go on the low end, take a couple $100 an hour. If I have to waste 10 minutes of every hour on just resurfacing where I can't really generate any income, you know, any revenue, you know, so you take that over a full day and take that over a month, over a year, you're talking tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars that are basically unrealized potential revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the thing that was like, okay, there's obviously, if you can cut this down to, say, 2 minutes, you know, you could make these arenas, and especially these arenas that are very, very highly booked. People are getting on the ice at midnight or whatever, really late, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, if you could get one extra rental in there every day, that's huge return on investment.
You don't think about that when you're thinking of, it's 15 minutes, you know, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But then you start breaking it down per week, per month, per year. Now you're really talking.
I always think of the dollars and cents.
Yep.
And it drives Katie, she can't stand it. Whenever I go into a game or a business or something, I'm always like, okay, how are they making money? and I just, I can't help myself.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, and my brother Dave and I was like, Dave, because my brother Dave is incredibly smart. I respect his opinion so much. And him and I, we met at Acoustic Cafe with a drawing pad, and we just started, you know, hey, what if we did this? And I was like, okay, maybe if we had something come out of the boards, then just go around and whatnot. And this was really long after Amazon bought what's called the Kiva system, which is basically little small bots that go around the Amazon facility and they get product, right?
Oh,
and,
sure.
And they follow lines or whatnot. And Dave's like, Paul, this doesn't need to be attached to the boards. These could be just remotely, you know, driven. So I don't know if you've seen our videos on YouTube and whatnot, but you'll see Dave controlling the prototype we made with a PlayStation controller. Yeah, totally serious. And but so I'm like, okay, you know, there's something here. And I just I could not get it out of my head. And so this is where I'm trying to think what happened next. I built this a small model of what I wanted to do. And I contacted Shark Tank. And I was way premature to contact Shark Tank.
Sure.
But they called me back. You know, I got a call back. I remember where I was on Highway 61, you know, where I got a call from Culver City, California. And I'm like, I don't know who this is.
Just thinking of the telemarketer.
You know, Culver City, I know that's, you know, Shark Tank, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to the producer, and the producer said, well, it's a really cool idea, but you need to get some sort of model or prototype or whatnot. So I contacted a few people locally and just said, hey, guys, you know, I got this inventor buddy over in Alma. You know, we can make a prototype for, you know, $7,000, $8,000, whatever. We can make just really, really crude. And so the first prototype was incredibly crude. I think we even burnt a hole in the ice at St. Mary's. That's how crude it was. Dead serious. And so I contacted these guys. I'm just like, okay. And we actually built a full-size 3-foot by 6-foot by, I think, 3-foot tall, like, prototype for $12,000.
Okay.
Built it, and actually, like, it worked. We were using, like, an electrical off and on. It was so crude. It was, like, I think our brush was the street sweeper off of, or the lawn sweeper off of Bob's lawn sweeper. It was so muddled together. I think, no, wait, on the first one, I'm just jogging my memory. It's been several years. On the first one, I think he had, like, this motorized wheelchair, and there was, like, turtle and rabbit or whatever was the speed.
Really,
so it was so incredibly crude. But I was just like, guys, I know this is obviously, I know this is not the final thing, but I know there's something here, and I can't shake this. I can't get this out of my head, you know, so Winona Daily News did a story on it, and it was front page of the news, and or the paper. Sure enough, Associated Press picked it up, and she called the article "Death of the Zamboni," and sure enough, you knew what happened. The Associated Press saw that, and I was bombarded with phone calls and emails and stuff from. Like, oh, it was in, like, USA Today, Hockey News. It was all over the place. It was, I didn't even want to answer my phone. I was on, like, a talk show in Niagara Falls, you know, for a bit. And I was on a talk show in the cities on one of their radio stations up there. And at first, when you're doing this, and this is in business in general, when you do anything at first, you're a laughing stock. Nobody wants, nobody wants to be a part of it because they think you're just so far out in left field. But when people start putting investment in, and so we got all this interest, and I was like, okay, guys, there's something here. I don't know how this is going to look. We need to get more, you know, we need to build another one. We need to build a second one. So I raised another, I think it was 60 or 70 grand, you know, and we built the second one. And the second one was a beautiful paint job, and it was it was much more robust. But we're like, okay, we're on the right track, but we need big dollars now. We need dollars to really make this thing, you know,
sure,
really make it make sense. I mean, we're talking millions of dollars. And so I remember where it was. We had an investor out of the Twin Cities put in several million dollars. You know, came down and saw the prototype and, you know, loved what we were doing, loved the concept, and, you know, okay, now we're cooking. Now we're really starting to. So we made, I think it was 3 more prototypes. We contacted a company out of Boston, and they were doing our automation. So it was really started taking off. We have several people working on it, even full time people working on it for, you know, for quite a while. Because before all that, before I got that investment, I can't hardly tell you how many times I was told no, or pretty much laughed at.
Sure.
Like pretty much, you know, laughed at, but I had, no one was going to, I was not going to let anybody stop me on this. Mm-hmm. I was just like, no, we're going to get this done, you know?
Yep.
And so I got it as far as I could. I had very limited funds to do this myself, so I had to have investment. It's not ready for the market yet. It's actually up in a northern Minnesota city right now. The major investor, he has majority control, you know, so I don't have any control over it anymore, over pretty much anything, you know. So that's the only thing when you start something so big. It's not like making a table or something where, you know, you could do that relatively cheaply and easily, probably by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, something like this, it's millions and millions of dollars. You know, you're talking safety protocols, you're talking all these, you know, all these things.
Sure.
But I've had so many people from around the world actually, you know, contact me by email and whatnot and wanted to order them. You know, I'm like, it's not ready. You know, it's out of my hands. I can't do anything with it now.
So most people think of you when they think of this product.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's actually someone else that's now the majority owner?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and he's in the cities and it's still being worked on, huh?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what's going on right now because now I'm the little guy, you know? That's what happens so often.
Very little guy or?
The very little guy,
okay.
Yeah, that's so many times. And trust me, we started this in 2011. And, you know, what? Many, many years ago. I'm still as passionate about it today as I was then.
That's good.
I mean, after all these years, we tried to kill this thing so many times. And we're like, okay, this won't work because of this. This won't work because of this. I've had people from with NHL affiliates, you know, say, you know, this makes a lot of sense. The return on investment's there. You make this, you know, this thing works the way you're saying, you know. And the sad thing is the last prototype we did, we're so close. We're so close. And now that it's out of my hands, I can't do much about it, you know, because now there's other people that, you know, I'm just the little guy from Wisconsin now.
Sure.
You know, so,
sure.
You know, I'm as passionate about it as I ever was. And all these years later, you know, I think it's still, you know, game changing, you know, for the industry. So
do they even talk to you then anymore about what's going on? They keep you updated in the loop at all? Or
if I think there's, you know, like I say, it's there's already been millions spent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be probably a couple million left yet.
Sure.
You know, so and that's you know, that's where the struggle is, you know, because it when you make something like this, especially from just average people, you know, I'm not Elon Musk or I'm not someone that I can just go into my bank account. Oh, here's another million to throw at it. You
yeah,
know? I'm a simple, you know, just a guy in Wisconsin, you know, and so that's the hard part. If I had unlimited funds, we probably wouldn't be talking right now. I'd probably be working on it.
Sure. Did you come up with a name for it then?
It's called So26, and actually, if you go to YouTube, and there's a video on it on YouTube, and So26, we have, you know, we've interviewed arena managers, and actually from, you know, very close to here, and they give us glowing reviews, you know, on the product.
Sure.
On the actual video, so.
So26.
So26,
what does it stand for?
So 6 feet is the 6 foot width.
Okay.
And So2 is basically Icelandic for resurfacer.
Oh.
And so it's my brother Dave. He's all, you know, wants to put this artistic touch on it. And
sure.
Like, okay, whatever. You know, go for it. I would have been like Ice Jet or something, like really. That was our original name, like just something really basic, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
So with that, then the benefits are that it'll resurface the ice faster.
It's designed to resurface the ice in about 2 minutes.
Rather than what was it, 10 minutes?
Rather than about 9 to 10 minutes.
Nine to ten. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that's why it's been so appealing and I've had so much contact from around the world is because, you know, 2 minutes is a game changer. Just all the extra rentals you can get throughout the day. The other thing is, too, is you take this at an NHL setting, okay? NHL has TV timeouts, you know, twice a period. Mm-hmm. You know, those TV timeouts are about a minute and a half to 2 minutes. Well, you could potentially – and backtrack just a second. A regular Zamboni goes about 7 to 9 miles an hour, and it covers a swath of 7 foot at a time. So it does go around and around and around and around. There's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of inefficiency in the model because it's all manually driven. An automated Zamboni or Olympia doesn't help you at all because you're still only covering 7 feet at a time. The concept here is that these are all GPS, you know, they're all GPS driven. You know, so there's not an actual driver. You know, there's actually, yeah, they're 6 foot. And like I say, if you watch the video on YouTube, you'll see video of it going around the rink. They're 6 foot wide units, but if you take like a football field, the laps around a football field, you got your track, right? You know, you take your hockey rink, which is 85 by 200, and you just divide that into 6 foot increments. Now, if you go down, you're going to have to come back. So you're going to take your 85 width, and you're going to divide that into be 42 and a half feet. And so what increments can I get these units so I can be the most efficient in covering 42 and a half feet? So if I'm going down, obviously I'm coming back. So that was the concept, and you can do it with either 2, 3, or 4 units. If you do it with 3, is probably makes the most sense. And they have like ultrasonic waves on it, so they don't bump into each other, and you know it's you know really robust. But if you do it, let's say 3 units, well 6, 12, 18. Now I'm covering 18 feet at a time.
Sure,
I'm going the same speed as Zamboni. I'm not changing the speed at all, you know, but I'm just covering a lot more distance at a time. And so, you know, 3 at 6, 12, 18, you know, 4 at 24 feet. Well, I only have to go around twice, you know, instead of going around 10 times.
Yeah.
Or 8 times with the Zamboni. You know, so, and plus there's differential in the water lane. This has been really, really well thought out. My brother Dave, I give a lot of credit to. I can tell you numbers like this left and right. Just because we put a lot of passion into it. This isn't, you know, this project to me is not about, you know, I want to get every penny back, you know, for every investor that's ever put a penny in. I would love to do that, mm-hmm. you know, but everything is out of my hands right now. I can't be the, you know, the ringleader on this anymore, you know, but, to me, I just want to see this come to market. It's something I'm really proud of. And
it'd be the big innovation in hockey. It sounds like
it's like you know, just the write ups that the Hockey News did on it and USA Today and other places, you know, wrote about it and saying that exact same. If this works how he says it will, this will change the game. And I'm like, well, I'm a hockey fan. You know, that's first. Mm-hmm. I'm an entrepreneur. But I'm also a hockey fan.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a dad. I'm a hockey fan. I wanted to see this impact the sport that I love.
Sure.
You know, and so if you can resurface and say an NHL game within a period and not just between periods,
yeah.
Now all of a sudden your playing surface is so much better than if you're just resurfacing in between periods.
Yeah.
You know, so the potential of this is, you know, but anyways, yeah.
So the idea is just that between TV timeouts, they'd be able to resurface right in between there real quick yep. and give the players better playing surface rather than twice a
game.
You
probably wouldn't flood in between periods just because there is a, you know, the hot water you lay down, it does need some time to form. You know, so you probably wouldn't flood in your TV timeout. But thank you. You could go around and at least do a scrape. And the scraping was the hardest thing we did. Okay. That was extreme. It's not the automation. Automation's everywhere.
Sure.
You know, but our biggest detractors were how are you going to shave the ice with a 1,000-pound machine? So we spent a lot of time and a lot of resources on redeveloping and actually redesigning the blade, you know, an ice resurfacer, you have this massive 8,000-pound Ford F-150 chassis, basically. But it's got a massive paper cutter blade on it. And if you drop that on someone's hand, you'd slice it off. I mean, it is extremely sharp and extremely dangerous, actually, too, to change and whatnot. So, I lost my train of thought for a second. But, yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah. That's I'm getting to that age.
That's a pretty cool story, though. And for anyone out there that's thinking, you know, you invent something and it comes out the next year, that's not exactly the case. This has been going on for 13 years.
There is no such thing as an overnight success.
No.
It doesn't. Any overnight success that you see, it's like an iceberg. You see 10% of it on, you know, above the water, right? Well, the years and years and years of sweat and whatnot, trying to protect what you did and everything, you know, in those years before you actually go out to the public, you know, no one sees that.
Sure.
No one sees the money people lose, and they only see the successes, right?
Yep.
And that's the thing that I think people don't realize is there's so many failures along the way. You know, you get laughed at when you're trying to raise money. You
get a lot of no's.
You get so many no's, it you almost expect it. You know, and you know, but if you really believe in it, you know, and you just keep pursuing it. Now you got to be honest with yourself, because you know we did file several patents on this, and like the blade one in particular, that's going to be a difficult patent to get around. You know, so you know we do have, I believe, some protection on that at least. But if you want to invent something, you know, it's great, but it is extremely difficult.
Sure.
I mean, the first question you got to ask yourself is it already on the market? Just because you've never seen it, it might exist in another country.
Right, yep.
It might exist somewhere else. And the second question, if you don't see it anywhere, why doesn't it exist? Is there a need for it in the market? And this could be the ice resurfacer. This could be anything. Is there a need for it? Then you got to ask yourself, if you can pass those two tests, is there already a patent on it? And that's a tough one. Really tough one, because there's billions of people in this world, and even if you're really intelligent, I consider myself pretty intelligent, and you're intelligent, but there's a lot of very intelligent people out there that probably thought the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had an idea one time to turn the toilet bowl into a dehumidifier, you know,
really?
Yeah, the toilet bowl of your bath or whatever, right? And so you have a dehumidifier, and then it would actually run the water into your toilet bowl, so you don't have to constantly drain out the upper cavity there of the toilet.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I've never seen that before. It'd be nice. You don't have to constantly drain your dehumidifier. You know, it can be a nice thing. Sure enough, you do a patent search, someone out in Germany or whatever has already thought about it and filed a patent on it. So, you could be like the fifth person or the 20th person in the world. You're still in the 0.11 percentile or whatever, but someone beat you to it.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to ask yourself, okay, is there already a patent out there for it?
Do patents run out?
They last for 18 to 20 years. But then you have to file them in other countries. It's expensive. It's not a cheap process. The U.S. has probably the best patent system out there that I'm aware of, because we have what's called a provisional patent. And are you familiar with those at all?
Not really.
Okay.
And I don't think our users might be either. So I think, or our listeners, that'd be good to know about.
So U.S., again, a lot of people from other countries come to the U.S. to file their patents. That's why the U.S., one reason why the U.S. is such a leader in patents.
Okay.
Because we have what's called a provisional patent. You can do a brief synopsis of whatever your idea is, and you can file a provisional patent. It's relatively cheap. You can do it on LegalZoom or another online platform.
Okay.
Or you can even get an attorney to draw it up. You're still only looking at $1,000 to $1,500. I mean, not necessarily overly expensive. Once you get the granted of the provisional patent status, and then you're the first to file. And very important, because you're not the first to think about it, but you're the first to file. And then so the U.S. government will give you a year to shop that around and protect it for you. Now, if you can't figure it out within a year, chances are you probably don't have something.
Okay.
And that's just the harsh reality. If you can't get someone to invest in it, or, you know, really believe in it within a year, you probably don't have a marketable product.
Okay.
However, if you do, and we've converted multiple patents to or provisional patents to the standard patents, you're definitely going to spend more money. But at that time, you're going to have some sort of financial resources, and you're going to have investors backing you. So it's a great system because there's a lot of people out there. I'm sure many listeners have very, very good ideas, but they don't know where to go. They don't know where to start. They're afraid if someone's going to steal their idea, and that's a very valid concern. You don't want someone coming in and just swooping up and,
sure,
oh, thanks. And, so you don't want to lose what, because a lot of these inventions, they're personal to people. They're actually something that it's not just about the money. It's something that you personally, feel strongly about.
Sure.
And so when someone does that, it's heartbreaking, So, yep. but long story short, the U.S. has a very, very good system to help protect, entrepreneurs and inventors, but you gotta get out there and make it happen though.
Yeah.
Tough
part for me would be going to ask people for money. I think that'd be the toughest part because you don't know if you got a failure, and if you do, those people just kind of have to eat it sounds like, and know what they're getting themselves into.
And I can definitely say this. I never want to lose a penny for anybody. Right. I never ever want to lose someone's money, and I really, really believe that. Every single person that invested, with our project, I was very clear with them up front. I'm like, we're all in uncharted waters here. We don't know exactly, there could be some sort of element here that we've overlooked. I don't know what it would be, but, you just got to be really, right up front with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll see that. They know. They understand that anytime you invest in anything, no matter how good it looks, you're taking a risk.
Sure.
You're taking a risk. And there's some people that want to be a part of something new, and they want to be a part of, and they'll take that risk with you. I put my heart into this thing, man. I mean, I can't even tell you how much of me I put into this. Yeah. And I would still, if I was able to today, I'd still continue it. That's how much I still believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not, I also have to make a living for my family.
Right.
And whatnot too. I have to focus on my business and whatnot. So yeah. I don't have any regrets. I mean, it's still a great product. I just don't have the reins anymore.
All right. So it's called the SO26 is what it was.
SO26.
All right. So for those who are listening, there's YouTube videos out there to see how it works, so that'd be kind of neat. I got to go check it out because I don't think I've ever seen it before.
Yeah. I think we have like 30-some thousand views on it or something. So it got a lot of views. And
sure.
So.
So now going on with other entrepreneur things that you do, you also own a Little Caesars in town.
Yeah.
And so I want to get into how'd you get into the pizza game, I guess it is, because you are out there, you are promoting a lot of it around town from what I see, because I see Little Caesars stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
And so how did you decide, I'm going to open up a Little Caesars franchise? Because we had one in town before.
We did.
And on Fifth Street.
Yeah.
And that shut down.
Yeah.
And now you're out by Walmart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so how'd you get into that? I'm interested.
All right. So I love business and I love projects and whatnot, right? We did our first strip mall, with Maurice's MGM back in 2006. And I have a partner down in Florida and my brother, so we did that back in 06. Went well. We didn't really know what we were doing, but it's a very nice strip mall, still to this day. And I went to lunch. I'll just give you the background here. I went to lunch with a local businessman who owned a property over on 61, Service Drive. And there was an old, car lot right there and whatnot. And I was like, I can do something with this because I knew there would be companies that wanted it. So I have a book about this thick and with all these different corporations in there. And I just started cold calling. just started calling. And that's the building that houses the Caribou Coffee.
Yes. You know? I remember that car lot there.
Yes. Yes. Yep. So we were originally just going to, okay, maybe we can flip this, make a few bucks or whatnot, and talk to my partners. I was just like, why don't we just develop our own little mall here and, you know, rent to them. And so the reason we have a Caribou Coffee and not a Starbucks there is because Caribou Coffee starts with a C and Starbucks starts with an S. So as I was going through alphabetically,
that's awesome.
We got to Caribou Coffee before, and they're like, yeah, we love the spot, love the location, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
So that is the reason why that is not a Starbucks, and that's now a that's a Caribou Coffee.
Well, some people are going to thank you for that, because I know a lot of people in Minnesota that would prefer Caribou over Starbucks any day.
Yep.
And we have a Starbucks, obviously, in the Target, but that is hilarious that because you're paging through the phone books. C comes before S.
C comes way before S. I mean, there's a lot between C and S. And it could have been a Panera. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But so, you know, we did that one, and we sold that one and did well. Did well on that. So we're like, hey, we kind of get, we know what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
So saw the property. This was biting off a lot. And saw the property, you know, basically right by A&W there.
Yep.
At the time, it was, oh, man, 2 or 3 acres. And talked to my partners, and I was like, guys, we can do something in this lot. And this is a big project, you know, but we can do another building here too. So we did that mall there with the Jimmy John's and et cetera, and we developed the Qdoba, and then we developed the storage facility in the back. And but we had this empty space in there. We had still had a couple empty units. And I was just coming off a project, and I was just like, okay, I'm between jobs right now. I contacted my partners. I was just like, what do you guys think about starting a business in here? I was just like, come on, we got the space. You know,
yeah.
It's not making us any money right now.
Sure.
You know, let's do some research and let's start a business in here. You know, at least the property taxes there, they get paid on a pro rata share from all the tenants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have a space in there that's not even paying their property taxes. So we get dinged for their property taxes for that empty space.
Mm-hmm.
So talked to them, and I did some research, and I really liked my research on Little Caesars. It was just a really good, a lot about it was just really the numbers, the business model. You know, I'll say it. I wasn't necessarily this massive Caesars guy before that. I mean, I wasn't some, you know, wearing the costume around town because I loved it so much, you know. But
you can try to promote it that way out on the roundabout.
Yeah. But I was just like, we got the space. I love their business model. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And I've always been kind of like that. Hey, this makes sense. Let's do our research. Let's do it. So my two partners, you know, and myself, we flew to Detroit. We met with, you know, the Little Caesars corporate there. And, you know, they approved us to do the store there. And so I was like, okay, you know, I guess we're going to do this. And so my brother and I actually, we did the whole build out. Like, you know, so my brother and I, and we hired two neighbor kids. And we did all the tile, all the FRP, you know, did the
yep.
framing, did all the build out. Still costs a lot of money. But I got no regrets on it. I mean, you know, as far as, you know, doing the business, I love the business. I love what I do. I know I've done other things in the past that may be more cerebral, you know, maybe challenge you a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I've been challenged enough over the years.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm ready to fade into the background a little bit and just like, I actually enjoy going to work. I enjoy what I do. It's just flipping pizzas, but I'm there probably 30 hours a week, and so I keep a pretty close eye on the, you know, on the business, and you know, so that's how that came about. And I didn't know how long I'd want to stick with it, but we're about to go into our 7th year now.
It's been 7 years already.
Well, it's been 6 years. We're going into our 7th year in like a couple weeks, and I've got honestly no desire to sell. I mean, I like what I do.
And you're there every day.
Monday through Thursday, pretty much 8 a.m. I'm the first person there, and I leave at about 4 o'clock or so. And I got a good staff, very good staff.
That's good because it's sometimes hard to come by these days.
We, interesting enough, we virtually never ever hire. It's rare actually. In 6 years, I've put out a now hiring post on Facebook like twice.
Well, that's very good then.
Yeah, so it's very rare. It's usually family or friends of people that already work there.
That's good.
So that's just a nice thing to have because we hold everybody to a high standard there. And if you're not pulling your weight, it's probably not going to go well.
Sure.
So you got to make sure that you're, and I hear it very fast if someone's not pulling their weight. I enjoy it. I've thought about, my wife and I, we've thought about maybe doing a second one or whatnot, but I'm like, I don't know if I want that headache. I don't know if I want to do something in, say, Austin, Minnesota or something like that, which we've looked at that city many times.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to do something in Austin and then someone doesn't come to work or something. I got to get in the car and drive all the way to Austin to cover it. I got no desire to do that. No desire at all.
So what was it about the business model that you liked? Was there something specific that stood out? I like that.
The mortality rate, to be honest.
Just not having to hire many people?
Well, no, the mortality rate of Caesars franchisees.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
Yeah, extremely high success rate and relatively low buy-in costs.
Okay.
I didn't have the money to open a McDonald's or something.
Sure.
You're looking into the millions.
Really?
Oh, easily.
Okay.
Easily, yeah. If you do a standalone McDonald's, you're in the millions. And I didn't have that kind of funding, to do that. And so I like the buy-in. Caesars is relatively close to, say, it's a little bit more expensive than, say, opening a Subway. But, a sub shop, relatively inexpensive. Mm-hmm. But, a Qdoba or something like that, it's way more money than, And a lot of times they want you to open, one or two more. They want you to open that within a certain period of time.
Oh, so they actually want you. They're like, want you to do another one.
You look at a lot of companies, a lot of franchises, and respectfully, sometimes they'll set you up to fail because if they're requiring you to open a certain amount of stores, you may you may sacrifice your standards, because you may go into a smaller city than what you think you can actually support, so you're going to, I have to open another store. And then you start justifying it to yourself. I'm going to open this store or this restaurant in a city that's not big enough. Like you're not going to get an Olive Garden in Winona.
Right.
It doesn't have the population base to support it. So there's certain franchises that we've talked to and about Winona, and there's a limited number that are willing to come here just simply because of population.
Yeah, and isn't that a thing that they'll do a study to make sure it makes sense so you don't have that mortality rate that it'll fail because it looks bad on them anyways?
They have very good access to a lot of information.
Sure.
I wonder how they get that information sometimes. I'm like, are you shaking someone down? Or how do you know all this? So these companies, they have sales information on, I don't know how they're getting it because I don't tell anybody my sales information at all. I can't even do it if I wanted to.
Sure.
But they have their population standards. They have their traffic counts, that they have to have,
mm-hmm.
Like a Starbucks or whatnot. If you're not at a certain traffic count,
yes.
Say 15,000 cars a day or more, sorry.
Well, a lot of people, I always see people on, Facebook or whatever. Well, Winona needs such and such. Winona needs this restaurant. And if it's a franchise, they have standards that we're not going to allow you. Just like you said, Starbucks, we're not even allow you to be there if you don't have the traffic because it'll just fail is all it's going to do. So a lot of people, we need a Texas Roadhouse or an Olive Garden or whatever it is. Well, they simply probably won't give you the franchise because it wouldn't make it.
And I love Winona. I love this place, right? But I can't change the fact that our population is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have the room really to grow. We're not going to be a 50,000 person city. We're not going to be La Crosse or Eau Claire,
right,
unless we go way up on the ridge. And so nonetheless, it's you have to adhere to these standards as a company and as an entrepreneur, because if you don't, you start, you know, justifying it here or there. That's when you really get vulnerable, because it's very expensive to open these businesses, extremely. You take an A&W, you take any of these standalone places, you're in the millions, you know, to open one of these places. And so you have to, even for us when we did our storage garages, we did a lot of research on Winona, on how many units we had per capita and compared to the national average. And you don't just build it and hope that they rent.
Right.
You know, you have to be really, really, you have to look at the numbers pretty heavily, you
sure.
know, before you just, you know, blindly go and do it. But, and the other thing is too, you have to have a certain net worth, and which some people will criticize companies. Like you take a Dun Brothers, take a Starbucks, take a Cold Stone, take anything, any company that will actually franchise, and they all have net worth requirements, and which is really, really important. Because if they start to skimp on those net worth requirements and you don't have the capital to do it, the number one reason businesses fail is because of lack of capital. You know, because you're going to make mistakes. You guarantee you're going to make mistakes. And if you don't have the capital to, you know, fix that mistake or to reroute the ship or whatnot, you know, it doesn't help anybody by letting someone open a franchise and then they don't have the money to do it, and then they go bankrupt in 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
Nobody's winning here. Nobody's winning there at all. You know, the landlord's not winning, because now they just spent money on a build-out and helped build out the space for the tenant that they're not going to get that money back because they're declaring bankruptcy. So now they got to release that out. The bank's out the money. You know, nobody wins in that situation. And so you have to have the capital to be able to, you know, to open a business. And they're not, it's not about, oh, they're making it so the little guy can't, you know. No, they're making it so you don't lose everything.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I've lost before, and it's heart-wrenching.
Yep.
It is, I lost $100,000 one year. You know, I lost a lot of money one year, and I am not ashamed to admit it at all, because you don't do anything in life without failing, you know, and you're not just going to, you know, climb to the top and not be knocked down a few times.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, I don't care to talk to anybody in business that has never lost before, you know, that's never, you know, had a failure before, you know, because they don't understand, you know, how much of your heart you put into a business. It's not just the dollars and cents. Oh, I want to make as much money as I can. That's not the way. That's not why you go into business. You got to be somewhat, you know, like what you do too.
That too. Yep. I think that's what people don't understand, is there's a lot of requirements to open up a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just get to say, well, I want to open up a Texas Roadhouse, so we're going to do it right now. No. I mean, there's a lot, and then people don't get that. And then, Winona doesn't know what we need this stuff and all that. And it's like, it's not as simple as all that. So I'm glad that you could shed some light on that, because I had an idea of that's kind of how it goes. You got to have the population, you got to have the traffic, but there's more to it than you said. You know, you got to have a certain amount of capita so you don't fail, and you got to have a net worth of so much. So that's really good that you shine the light on that.
If you compromise on any one of those things, net worth or traffic count or whatever it is, if you compromise on any one of those things, you are compromising on your potential to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times when people get into business, they get a tunnel vision. I've been there before. You get a tunnel vision and you're just like, oh, I just want to be in business so bad. And then you don't see certain potential downfalls.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every week I'll spend thousands of dollars on food. You know, thousands of dollars on food.
Sure.
If I have a hiccup, if my truck is a day or two late, you know, it's catastrophic to some stores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I miss a day of sales, like on a Friday or Saturday, it costs me a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of money. And most restaurants, or especially restaurants, you only have so much capital. You know, even if you've been in business for a long time, if you have to shut down for a week or something because of whatever, sewage backup, whatever,
mm-hmm.
that could put some under. That could put some under. That's how hand-to-mouth a lot of businesses are.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
So with now Little Caesars, if I read right, don't they use their flour from Winona? Does Winona supply
some of the best flour you'll ever get?
And that's from Barron's, right?
No, that's from Bay State.
Bay State. I'm sorry. Start with a B. So they are actually the ones that have the flour, and you have to go by their recipe, obviously.
So interesting enough, and I could have my numbers wrong on this, but Bay State, I want to say, provides to it's several hundred Little Caesars. It's not just us. It's
right. Yes.
It's one of their biggest clients, actually, is Little Caesars Corporate. Okay. And so they are, and I'm not just saying this because I'm from Winona, but it is incredibly good flour.
Okay.
Like I've had people in my network, you know, use it in their homes, and they've told me before, this stuff is very, very good flour. I wouldn't know the difference personally because I'm not a baker at home or anything. So I wouldn't necessarily know, but I've been told this before that it's a very, very good product. You know, so it gets made here in Winona, it gets shipped up to the cities, and it gets shipped back to us.
Can't just go right down the street and be easy, right?
It would be so nice if I could, just go over there and open up my trunk and
throw some in, guys,
right?
That'd be awesome. But, yeah, that's kind of a cool little fact that maybe not everyone knows is that the Bay State supplies flour or they have an account with Little Caesars. So when you have a Little Caesars pizza, you're having a little taste of Winona in there.
Little Caesars, you know, is I think it's one of their biggest, if not their biggest customers, you know, for Bay State. So it's you're helping support Winona Jobs.
Sure.
You know, so and it's great flour. It's
Well, and you know, you told me another fun fact, if I remember right. Actually, you're telling my dad and I this. We were asking you one day, what's the busiest day of the year? And we figured it was like Super Bowl or something like that. And you said it was Halloween, I think.
Halloween is the...
That's, do you know, is there any reason that you know behind it or just that's just the day?
They told me this when I started, you know, and like when we were doing our training, that Halloween is your busiest day of the year. Now, there are some days... And I tell you, there's one or two days that I could tell you that come close to it, but you would never guess it. It's not your Super Bowl. It's not New Year's Eve. You wouldn't
it's
guess
kind of
it.
It's like a drinking holiday of like St. Patrick's Day or maybe Valentine's Day.
I could give you 20 guesses and you wouldn't get it. You know
what? Labor Day.
One of our busiest days of the year.
So Halloween's one of the busiest. What are they like?
Most of the time, it's the busiest.
What would be like second and third behind it?
So for us, the second is actually the day before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So it's not like an actual, you know, it's just a Wednesday.
Yeah.
But we get hammered, like absolutely hammered on that day.
Pre-Thanksgiving pizzas.
Yep.
Wow.
So what happens, they know they're all going to have a big meal the next day.
Yeah.
And so family's already in from out of town. They may be staying in the guest room or whatnot.
Sure.
Like, okay, let's just have something easy for dinner tonight, right? And so, you know, they get delivery with us or you know, through DoorDash or just come in and get it. And that day is one of our top probably, you know, 3, 4, 5 busiest days of the year.
Wow.
Yeah. The day before Thanksgiving.
And then what would be the third, do you think, or what for your store, I guess? Is there another day that stands out?
Oh, boy. Haven't gone that deep in the records.
Gosh, I just can't believe that Super Bowl's not up there. That's just like a holiday in general for everyone.
It's funny because we do good on it, but these other days are like way more than what like a regular Wednesday would be or whatnot, you know.
That's crazy though. So, I wouldn't have thought of Halloween as that, you know. But I guess it makes
they get
sense
done,
too.
You know, going around getting their candy and all that stuff, and obviously mom doesn't or dad or whoever doesn't want to cook, you know.
Right,
and so they're like, okay, what's simple and easy and relatively inexpensive? You can feed a family of four on pizza way cheaper than you can on any other platform.
How much are the hot and readies nowadays? Are they
so for us they're $6.99.
$6.99. Okay. Yep. So about $7 for what is that large, is it? Or
so
a medium?
I could feed two adults on one pizza.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, and like I eat a lot, fair amount. And I could eat about half a you know, pepperoni or whatnot. So it's and there's a lot of people that eat less than I do, but you know, two adults on $7,
that's pretty good money.
It's $3.50 a piece.
Yep.
You know, that's where are you going to find that anywhere else?
Not very.
And I tell you, the food industry, fast food in general, is extremely cutthroat. I mean, extremely cutthroat. I mean, a nickel here and there on your pricing can mean the difference, all the difference, like in the world. You know, and so because it's so cutthroat, you go and just around Winona, go to Arby's, you know, you get to 2 for $7. Hey, that's a great deal. You know, you get two nice sandwiches for $7. That's a great deal. You know, there's, you know, Burger King, there's other places. McDonald's has a $5 menu. Fast food, I don't want to pick on subs, but subs have gotten really expensive.
Oh, yeah. Subway, I go in and it's like $13 for a foot long. I'm like, what's going on here?
It's very expensive. Granted, you're getting good food, good quality food, you know, and so I don't want to, you know, rip on that at all. But on, you know, on these other platforms, you know, $6-$7, there's not a lot of profit margin in there. So you have to sell a lot. You have to sell a lot, you know, a lot, make a lot of transactions to make it viable, you know, and so, but yeah, it's, there's, you know, yeah, like I say, that nickel, that dime, you know, that means so much, you know, because the average, a good restaurant, like, what do you think a good restaurant will net? Like I'm talking a good restaurant. Like, what percentage do you think after all their expenses that they actually net?
Well, I think you want to try to get, like, around 30 or 33%, I thought it was. Like, you try to do a third for product, a third for labor, and a third for profit, but I don't know if that's true.
I would love if that was true. Like, I would probably own a building like this if that was the case.
Yeah.
And nice cars.
Yeah.
No. I would love that type of number. No, a good restaurant will do 10%.
Oh, wow.
A good restaurant will net 10%. And so a really good restaurant, I mean, like, excellent, well-run, the whole nine yards, will net 15%.
Wow, that's not much leeway.
No.
Ooh. No. Okay, for those who are thinking it's just easy to open up a restaurant and do it, the margins are kind of skinny.
Restaurants, there's a couple things, and again, I love what I do, but it's not for everybody. You know, it's unfortunately the failure rate in restaurants is extremely high.
Isn't it like one of the highest things?
It's very high.
It's like over 50%.
Oh, it's more like 80 or 90.
Oof.
It's not good. Unfortunately, it's not good. It's something that restaurants and bars, oh boy, you know, think twice if you're going to do something like that.
Make sure you have the passion for it then.
Now, if you're a bank, you know, you want to lend to dentists, you want to lend to certain companies that have extremely good success rates. Like, we're talking 99% success rates, you know, dentists, whatnot. You know, restaurants are, you know, it's, if you make it past 5 years in a restaurant, you've done really well. Like, you've done good.
Wow.
You know, so it's, you know, unfortunately, I could tell you a lot of places in Winona that have, the same building has changed hands many, many times.
Yep.
You know, the same restaurant has changed hands, you know, since I've lived here. You know, so it's, I'm not saying don't do it, but oh my gosh, take the blinders off. If you're going to ever do a restaurant, take the blinders off. You're going to be working, and you're going to be working hard.
And probably on holidays and weekends.
You know, unless
not everyone wants to do.
Unless you have a great staff like I do.
Yep.
And I have, you know, very good managers. I don't have to go in on weekends very, very seldom at all.
Sure.
You know, so, but that's, a lot of people don't have that. A lot of times so any business you ever want to get into, you know, you got to be willing to put the hours in, and you got to be willing to put the, you know, the sweat in, you know, otherwise it's just not, you know, for somebody then. So you're not, just don't expect to go into business and, well, I'm just going to make oodles of dollars and just huge profits and stuff. And, you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough, you know, and you're always,
Well, one of the big questions that I have for you is, Halloween falls on a Thursday this year. Are you going to be at trivia or not?
I will. I do not miss trivia. I planned vacations around trivia. I did not miss trivia.
Yes, we love trivia. You're much smarter than I am, but it's so much fun to just
go and
do it. Oh, no. If I know it, I always say it's probably it's either I'm going to be the only one that knows it or it's going to be a social. It's one or the other, it always seems. I don't really kind of know these random facts, even if it's been asked multiple times. Yeah. But I'm getting a little better at retaining some of the information. So I just want to see if you're going to be there because Halloween's your busy day. Trivia Two Fathoms, that happens on Thursday this year. So wanted to make sure you're still going to be there.
There is very few things I would actually consider shutting down for, you know, for the like for the night and even losing money on.
Yep.
You know, I do not miss my son's sporting events. I do not miss them.
Yep.
You know, going to Caleb's football games, going to my daughter's plays, I will not miss that. Yep. If it came to it, I would close the store for an hour or two just so I can make it.
Wow, that's dedication then for
and,
sure.
I'm not exaggerating a bit. You know, I love being a dad, you know, and I know you're going to be one soon.
I'm going to be one.
And that is so cool.
Yep.
You know, because it just, you can't compare it to like anything that you can imagine.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, I talk about, I know Caleb told me not to talk about his football team, but they're 6-1. They just beat an unbeaten team last night.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing really well. And Going to my son's sporting events or my daughter's plays. Sorry, I'm not missing that.
That's awesome.
I'm not missing it.
My parents didn't miss any of my sporting events either when I was growing up. And they were, even with wrestling, they were pretty much at every single one of my shows that I've had up in this area. So I know what that's like, and I'm going to find out what that's like personally for myself, I guess, someday here.
It is so rewarding, and I can't even begin to tell you how rewarding it is. And I'm not exaggerating this a bit. You know, I remember when Caleb was in grade 4 football at Maury Miller, and then, you know, 5 and 6 and in the junior high, and I think all those years I never missed a football game or a hockey game. I had to miss a couple baseball because I was training in Detroit, you know, over a couple baseball games, but I'm like, you know, that's something to me that is worth more. I love business, I love these other things, but it doesn't compare.
Yeah.
You know, this is more important. And thankfully, my staff knows that, and I think they appreciate that.
Probably do, because they know that you actually have some morals. You're not just a cutthroat business guy. You're also a family guy.
No, I am. I'm, like I said, I'm not going to miss it. You know, and so my staff makes sure, and I'll give Alyssa a lot of credit here. You know, she makes sure that, you know, it's covered, like on a Friday night or something, you know, so I can make sure I get to those games and, you know, and have a good time.
That's
great. So, it's, you know, all these accomplishments mean nothing if, you know, without your family, without your kids, you know.
Right, yeah. And so, Caleb, if you're listening, Dad's just proud of you. You don't have to be embarrassed.
I know sometimes I probably, it's just me being proud.
Yeah.
You know, I know. Yeah, should have talked about that for 45 minutes instead of.
Hey, everyone's always welcome to come on for a part 2 or 3 or 4, whatever it is. So, well, anything else you want to add to the podcast? We've been going for about an hour and 15 minutes here.
Oh,
so,
seriously?
Yeah, we're right about an hour and 19-ish. So,
yeah.
Is there anything else that comes to your mind that you want to talk about?
Or do you just
want to come do a part 2 someday?
I think I've said everything I can think of. You know?
It's been good, though. I mean, we went over hockey, your love for hockey. Yeah. It's not the Zamboni. Shh, don't say that.
Yeah.
It's the ice resurfacer. And also your entrepreneurship of Little Caesars. So I think if you ain't got nothing else, we'll wrap it up here.
Sounds good.
Cool. Yeah. So for those who are listening, go on out there. You can watch this on YouTube if you want to see what we look like. I mean, we're beautiful gentlemen here. Otherwise, if you don't want to see our mugs, you can go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, you name it, it should be out there. And this has been another episode of Brews and Crews. Cheers.
Cheers.